wrap up Chol HaShein Bo Sakana, and then have a quiz, which will be on Safek Pikuach Nefesh, Sakanas Eiver, and Chol HaShein Bo Sakana. It could be looked at as really easy, I think. It might not be looked at that way, but I think it is. It's just going to be cases of particular illnesses, and you categorize it. Tell me which of those three categories it is and what we would do for them on Shabbos. Like, it's pretty straightforward. I think I mentioned to you in the beginning of the year, one of the lessons I learned first semester is that we need more casework, just like seeing cases and figuring out how to apply what we've been saying, as opposed to, you know, making sure we remember the facts that we said in Shir. So after the quiz, which shouldn't be that long, but we'll see, I guess, I'll start out assuming it's 15 minutes, and then if I see that we need more time, so I'll give it till 20. But after that, we're going to talk about the levels of illness that are lower, where there's no great danger, there's no real dysfunction or illness, it's just the person's not comfortable. And those are the levels that we've talked about of Mitzas Choli and Mechush. Clear? Good? Okay. So, Chol HaShein Bo Sakana. We started on this last time, and we said that it's somebody who is bona fide sick. Like, they're not somebody who is just, you know, not feeling great, but there's something wrong. But they're not in danger of losing their lives. So you don't have v'chai b'hem, you know, live by them, don't die by them, because they're not dying anyway. But we do have a principle, which we've already seen, which is that gzeros derabanan, as a general rule, rabbinic decrees do not apply to somebody who's in great pain. So we're going to see exactly how that applies here. That's what we're going to get to today. But that's basically what we're talking about here. And we gave the opening case, the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chavtas Amad Aleph. Right? Anybody remember what that case was? Ha, it's not on your source sheet this week. What's the, yes, Leah?
Like a woman within 30 days of giving birth.
Exactly.
We can't, like, override Shabbat, but we can ask a boy to override Shabbat.
Bingo. The case of a woman who, as we just said, is actually between 7 days and 30 days after birth, because for the first 7 days she's in a higher category of risk. But from day 7 to day 30, we would ask a non-Jew to take care of her. And we said it's not only about that particular case, but Rav Hamnuna said it's about any case in which there is no threat to life. Okay, that was our opening point, which we said the Rashba and the Ran explain that the hallmark of this level of illness is either, we said, being bedridden or somebody's entire body is sick. And we're going to give some examples today that will help flesh that out. Okay? Clear? Good? Okay. By the way, the question arose last time. I think it was that Rebecca who asked the question. Maybe not, but somebody asked the question of how in the world did they know about the oculocardiac reflex? So I gave you one answer then, which I think is an accurate answer, which is, in general, medicine in those days was empirical as opposed to theory-based. You would sort of see things, and then you would draw your theory from that, and they observed something. But also, we do have a principle in the Gemara. It comes up in the Gemara in Sota in particular, but it comes up in a few places, called Sod Hashem Li Re'av, which is a pasuk. The secret of Hashem is to those who revere him. And the idea is that when we're talking Tanoim and Amoraim, they had access to information that Hashem chose to give them that's not like the way we learn and not the way we figure things out. Hashem channels information to them, and maybe that's the answer for how they knew this. Okay, either way. Take a look on your sheet, please, at source number 1, where the Shulchan Aruch takes what we saw from the Rashba and the Ran last time, that the definition of Chol HaShein Bo Sakana, or the symptom, I guess, of Chol HaShein Bo Sakana is bedridden or their whole body is ill, and you see that that's exactly what's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber writes in source number 1, Chol HaShenafal Machmas Chol Yola Mishkav Ve'en Bo Sakana. Somebody who is ill, and they fall into bed because of it, but they're not dangerously so they're bedridden. That's the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo. Then the Rama, Haga, Or he has some kind of an ache that causes him pain, and as a result, his whole body is ill. And here I want to make sure that we're clear. The word mechush can be misleading, because we're going to use the word mechush to describe somebody who just has a mild ache. But the key is what he writes after the word mechush, which is that this person's whole body is ill. Sha'az aval pi shaholech kenafal mishkav dami. So even if he's able to walk around, it's like he's bedridden. So somebody who, for whatever reason, is able to walk around, however, their chole kol gufo, their whole body is sick, they count as chole she'en bo sakana. Understood? We're just showing that the Rashba and the Ran make it into the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. So now we'll get some examples. Take a look at number two, please, from Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein, also known as the Aruch HaShulchan. People here learn Aruch HaShulchan in general before? You've seen it? Some have seen it. They are very, very worthwhile sefer. It's not like any sefer I've mentioned this year I would not recommend, but the Aruch HaShulchan is extremely valuable, because whereas the Mishnah Brura is trying to update you from the Shulchan Aruch's time till today by bringing the views that have been said since the Shulchan Aruch and addressing some new cases that have arisen since the Shulchan Aruch. So he's going to tell you the Prima Gadim says this, and he's going to tell you that the Pischeitcha is going to give you, like, you know, everybody afterwards. The Aruch HaShulchan goes the opposite direction. The role of the Aruch HaShulchan is to reverse engineer the Shulchan Aruch, to tell you this is where the Shulchan Aruch got it. Here's the Gemara, here are the Rishonim, here's where the Shulchan Aruch came in, and then he will also add some things that are after that. He'll tell you what the Magen Avraham has to say. On occasion, there's a reference to the Mishnah Brura, very rare, but he gives you more than just what a halacha is. He's giving you background that's very valuable on the halacha. The other thing that's very valuable about the Aruch HaShulchan, as opposed to the Mishnah Brura, is that the Mishnah Brura writes only on which part of Shulchan Aruch? Aruch Chaim, correct, which happens to be very useful. But the Aruch HaShulchan is on all of Shulchan Aruch. There are parts of the Aruch HaShulchan that we don't have for a variety of reasons, but the Aruch HaShulchan seems to be, in general, is on the Arba Chalakim, all four parts of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so if you take a look at source number two, the Aruch HaShulchan says, Mishi yeshlo mechush ba'alma. If a person has just a mild ache, and that's where we're going to be going eventually, mechush barosh, o b'me'av, o b'lev, chayotze b'zeh, he's got a headache, he's got a stomach ache, he's got some kind of an ache in his heart. What exactly that means, I don't know. I don't know if he means chest pain. I don't know if he means literally the heart. Unlikely, probably. V'hu mischazek v'holech kibari, or bibari. It probably should be kibari. He strengthens himself and he walks around like he's healthy. You have people who have some kind of an ache, they have a cough. They walk around, they drive around. I mean, they're not driving in his day, really. Early 20th century Lithuania, not too many people had cars. But they'll ride the train. And they do the things that they do. So these people are not called sick as far as the laws of Shabbos are concerned. You may not do anything for them on Shabbos. Afilu al yidei eino Yehudi, even via a non-Jew. Gizera mishum shchika samamanim, lest you grind things up. And again, we're going to talk about that category of mechush, so don't focus on that right now. The focus is on the next line. But if somebody has an ache which actually causes the entire body to be weak, he may be able to strengthen himself and walk around, but it's weak, it's heavy. His status is like somebody who is bedridden. So any type of ache that would normally render somebody homebound is what we're talking about here. And the Nishmas Avram gives us practical application. In number three, Mishi Eishlo Chom, if a person has a fever, Shekaragil Ein Yotzmi Pesach Habayis Machalazu, which normally if people have a fever like that, they stay home. Vafilu Anafala Mishkav, even if they're not bedridden. So It's always hard when you talk about fever numbers to give a precise number, right? Like when you're a kid and you know you want to know, do I have to go to school today? So your parent will make up a number and say, that's normal and that's not normal, right? What was the normal number? Anybody?
98.7.
Right. Exactly. You hear that? Right? What did you say? 100.4 in your school. Wow. They were very machmir. Okay. So you've got 98.6, 98.7, 100.4. I've heard people say 99, right? Because you're playing games, really, when it comes down to it. Okay. So okay.
I'm so sorry. I started a problem.
Yes, you did. Okay. The point is that working with numbers is difficult, especially when you realize that most of the world works with Celsius, not with Fahrenheit. And Fahrenheit is better in that it offers more precision as opposed to Celsius, like it'll because you know, right? One degree in Fahrenheit, my Canadian. The 1 degree in Fahrenheit is 1.8 degrees Celsius.
So confusing.
So sorry, the other way around. The other way. 1 degree Celsius is 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So what that means is you're working with greater precision in Fahrenheit, but that precision may not actually be meaningful. Like you're looking at is 98.7 worse than 98.6? Like somebody working with Celsius doesn't care about that kind of a difference. But essentially and basically, we would distinguish not based on numbers so much as what their health concerns are. When you hear that somebody has 101 degree fever, 102 degree fever, and I'm talking an adult, I'm not dealing with babies, I'm not dealing with somebody who is, you know, maybe very, you know, frail because of a particular illness. But generally speaking, when you hear somebody has 101, 102 degree fever, what's your reaction?
They're sick.
They're sick. Would you be scared for their life?
No.
No, right? That's that's really what what I'm trying to get at here. The fever that you're talking about here, for Chola She'en Bo Sakana, is like the 101, 102 range. They will stay home. They're not going to go running around. They may be bedridden, but they're not in danger. As opposed to, you hear somebody has 104 fever, what's your reaction? Get that person to the hospital. Exactly. So, you know, hospital, sponge bath, whatever you need to do to bring that fever down. So that's where we would draw the line. If someone told me they had 104 fever, my reaction is safek pikuach nefesh at that point, if not actual. That's the distinction. Clear? Okay. So the Nishmas Avram says, if someone has a fever, if someone has, he's dealing again with chol hashem bo sakana, someone has a fever which would cause him to stay home, even if he's not bedridden. Another example. Hasovel mikeev chazak. Somebody who suffers from a very strong pain. Lo be'ever pnimi. We're not dealing now with an internal aver and the question of, well, you can't really know what's wrong, and therefore maybe there's pikuach nefesh. Ad shenechlash kol gufo. But they have this ache, and it's so bad that his whole body is weak. Not just whatever body part hurts. Hamishalech kibari, someone who walks around like he's healthy, vafilu anafa lemishkav, and he hasn't yet become bedridden. Ach yipol lemishkav im lo yikabel tipul bizmano, but he will be bedridden if he's not treated in a timely manner. The kigon misha sovel mi migrena, such as a person who suffers from migraines. Migraines qualify as chol hashein bo sakana. Sorry. Yeah, migraines qualify as chol hashem bo sakana, but what the Nishmas Avram is adding here that's very important is anticipating it. Many people who get migraines can feel it coming on, and they have the possibility that they can take medication early, and it can help stem the flow of the migraine. So so he's telling you that qualifies. They don't need to wait until they have a migraine and say, now I'm a chol hashem bo sakana and I should be taking medication. They take the medication in anticipation of it. Clear?
You're saying health.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, no, I don't give medical advice,
no,
except
no,
by
I'm
accident.
Saying, like, that's the point of this.
Yes, okay. That's the point of this, correct. Yes, Bailey.
You mentioned somebody that, like, knows that a migraine is coming on, they can anticipate it, and therefore take medication ahead of time to prevent any sort of side effects in pain. But how do you distinguish somebody who knows a migraine is coming on versus not? Because that's an internal feeling. It's not like a...
Entirely subjective. If they think a migraine is coming on and they take medication and it turns out that it wasn't, number one, that may be because they took the medication, right? You know, maybe that just means the medicine worked. But number two, they did nothing wrong. In other words, they're doing what they're supposed to do. No, it's not a loophole in the least. It's a function of saying, once we say, Chol HaShem Bo Sakana takes medication, Rabbi Dr. Abraham, quoting Rav Shlomo Zalman, says, I don't understand. So you're going to tell me now that we're going to wait and put the person into a Chol HaShem Bo Sakana category so that they can take medicine? We don't want that person to be a Chol HaShem Bo Sakana on Shabbos. So let's prevent it from happening in the first place. That's what he's saying. It's not a loophole. It's a function of this category.
Okay.
In the same way that when we talked about Pikuach Nefesh, we said if you can treat somebody now in order to prevent them from being in a life and death situation, like the infection case that we talked about, to keep the infection from spreading, then that's what we do, right? Unless we know that we have the opportunity of waiting until after Shabbos, and we know with 100% certainty, whatever 100% means, that you can wait to treat it until after Shabbos and still prevent it. Correct. Yeah, right.
So what was the conclusion from the fever?
So you really distinguish between a fever that keeps people at home, but is not considered dangerous. No one looks at that as a danger. Mm-hmm. Versus a fever where we say, get this person to the hospital. We need their fever to go. First of all, we need their fever to drop as soon as possible because it's dangerous to have a fever like that. And also, it probably is symptomatic of something very wrong that we need to pay attention to.
So what do you do in the case of one that's not dangerous?
That's the Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. That's what we're talking about, which we're going to get to how we treat it next. That's where we're going. Right? You already know we take medicine because I said it. But we'll talk more about it. Yes, Leah.
I was just confirming both fevers, the dangerous one and the not dangerous one, you could take medicine.
Both fevers, the dangerous one and the non-dangerous one, you will be able to take. Correct. The dangerous one is dangerous, and the non-dangerous one is called a Hashem Bo Sakana.
So you're able to override Shabbat even if it's like...
We only said medicine right now. We're going to get right now to what else you're allowed to do. Oh, you're talking about the dangerous one? That's Pikuach Nefesh. Yeah. Correct. So what do we do for a Chol HaShem Bo Sakana? There are three options, because it's better to be confusing than not confusing. Okay, so there are three options. The first option is the one that we already saw in the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Tes, about the woman who gave birth. And that is, ask a non-Jew to violate a de'oraisa for you. We're going to come back to the whole issue of having non-Jews do things for you once we finish all of these different levels of illness. But the basic principle is that what's called amira la'akum, telling an idolater, literally, telling a non-Jew to do things for you on Shabbos, is not okay normally. It is an iser derabbanan, we assume. It's a rabbinic prohibition. However, you're allowed to override that rabbinic prohibition for a chol she'en bo sakana because of the pain that they are in. She'en, correct. I'm not likely to use the phrase Chol HaShe'yesh Bo Sakana, because I would just call that Pikuach Nefesh.
Okay, thank you.
If you take a look at source number 4, this is where the Mishneh Berurah says so. Kol She'barur She'en B'minias Oso Davar Cheshash Sakana. If it's clear that withholding that treatment is not going to involve any sort of danger, you can wait with the treatment. Ava pishami komakom tsarech hulo, even though the patient needs it, uregil and lasoslo, and it is what we would normally do for this level of illness, ein osin oso b'Shabbos, ela al yedei eino Yehudi. We would not do it on Shabbos, other than via a non-Jew. Kedin tsarech echol Hashem bo sakana. That's the rule of treatment of a patient who is not dangerously ill. Clear? So that's one option. Treat the patient by asking a non-Jew to take care of whatever it is that needs to be taken care of. So as an example of, you know, what would be justified, let's say you have somebody who has a migraine coming on and they don't have medication. So they could legitimately ask their non-Jewish neighbor to go get them whatever medication they need. but the non-Jew is going to, I don't know, drive to the store in order to get it, that's okay. That's what we're saying. That's an example of what we would be able to have a non-Jew do on Shabbos. Clear? Okay. Second level, or not level, I don't mean to present these as level. Second option is for a Jew to violate a derabanan with a shinui. Okay? I want to make sure that I'm clear before I show you the text on this, because the text is going to be a nightmare and is going to upset people. It's going to give you nightmares. The idea is a Jew would be allowed to do something that is normally rabbinically prohibited if they do it in an unusual way. We're going to spend time on what exactly constitutes an unusual way, but we're not ready for that yet. That's not coming for a little while. But you understand what I'm saying? Everyone understands what we're saying? Okay. So here's where it gets tricky. If you look at source number 5, and I apologize for the fact that the English runs over onto the next side. I would have liked to have had it all on one side because that would make it easier to refer back and forth and to read it all as one piece, but it didn't work out, so it's not. The Shulchan Aruch in this passage is going to talk about options, or not options, but opinions, I should say, for how we treat people who are chola she'ein bo sakana, as well as how we treat people who have sakanas aver. That category that we've already talked about. Okay? And it's going to give you 4 different views. We're going to paskin like the third view. I'm telling you that right now. The Shulchan Aruch will tell you that also. So take a look. Chola shenafal machmas chol yo lemishka ve'ein bo sakana. Right? Somebody who, if this sounds familiar, it's source number 1. Somebody who fell into bed as a result of their illness. They are bedridden, but they're not dangerously ill. And then the Rama. O sheyesh lo mechoshem itzta'er v'chalei menu kol gufo. He has an ache such that his whole body is in pain. Sha'az aval pi shaholech kenaf ala mishkav dami. So even if he walks around, we treat him as though he were bedridden. What do we do? Option number 1. Well, this is actually option 0. This is before we even get to the numbers. So omrim le'enu yehudi lasos lo refuah. We have a non-Jew do whatever it is. Aval ein mechalan olaves haShabbos beisur deoraisa. We would not violate a biblical prohibition ourselves. Afilu yesh bo sakanas aver. Even if there is danger to a body part, like we talked about, right? That's not, none of that is new. Now we get to the new part. Ulechalal olav Yisrael beisur derabanan biyadayim. Would we allow a Jew to violate a derabanan for this person actively? So the first view is, yesh matirim, afilu ein bo sakana sever. Yes, Ray.
Sorry, the non-Jew is not allowed to violate a derisa, or is?
So we have not said that we would allow the non-Jew to violate, well, no, sorry, we said a non-Jew is allowed to. Right. Just a Jew is not allowed to. Sorry, we did say that. Yeah. So you have 2 different categories, right? Category number 1 is sakana sever, which we've already dealt with. Category number 2 is chola she'ein bo sakana. Okay? And we're going to give, like I said, 4 different views. So the first view says, yesh matirin afilu ein bo sakanas aver. So some say a Jew is allowed to violate a derabanan for chol hashem bo sakana, even if it's no sakanas aver, even for chol hashem bo sakana, which we understand to be 1 level below. So a Jew is able to violate a derabanan. That's view number 1, and it applies to both of us. Clear? That's the first view. Second view. V'yesh omrim. Shem yesh bo sakanas aver osin, v'im ein bo sakanas aver ein osin. Some say, sakanas aver, a Jew is allowed to do a derabanan. But, Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, a Jew is not allowed to do it, derabbanan. That's the second view. Third view. V'yesh Omrim, Shem Ein Bo Sakanas Ever, Osin Bishinui. Vim Yesh Bo Sakanas Ever, Osin Belo Shinui. So some say that if it's Sakanas Ever, the Jew is able to do it, derabbanan. If it's Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, the Jew is able to do a derabanan with a shinui in an unusual way. Got it? And then the last view. V'yesh omrim afilu yesh bo sakanas eiver ein osin lo davar shu nismach lemalacha deoraisa. Udvarim she'ein ba nismach malacha osin afilu ein bo sakanas eiver. He says, we're going to treat both categories as the same, Chol Hashem Bo Sakana and Sakanas Eiver. We are only going to allow a Jew to do a derabanan if it's a derabanan that is not linked to a deoraisa.
Sorry, can you repeat?
Yes. I'm going to draw it first, or write it first. Well, my writing is while you're growing. What he's saying is, a Jew is allowed to do a weak derabanan. Remember that we said that among derabanans, there are distinctions. A derabanan which is meant, stay out of the picture. When you have a gezeira, we're worried about you potentially violating a biblical prohibition, and therefore we impose a rabbinic one, it's meant to keep you from violating a biblical one, that is very strict. That's severe. A derabanan like that. As opposed to a derabanan which is a standalone. It's not about preventing you from violating a deoraisa, like amir la'akum, telling a non-Jew to do things on Shabbos. That's a standalone gezeira, standalone derabanan. And what he's telling you is, the weaker derabanans, like amir la'akum, a Jew is allowed to do in these cases on Shabbos, whereas the real drabanans, so to speak, the ones that keep you from violating a deoraisa, those you would not be allowed to. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that because we're not paskening that way, so it's not relevant right now. But I'm pointing you to the last line, v'divrei hasvara hashlishis nirin. The winning view is the third view, which means, sakanas eber, like we've already said, a Jew can do a derabanan. Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, a Jew does a derabanan with a shinui, in an unusual way. So, to give you a particular example of, you know, what one might do that could fit this, let's say there's a light on in the room, and you have somebody who's a Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, and the type of illness that they have, let's say they have a migraine, and being in light is painful for them. And they don't have the option for some reason of going to a space without light. It's very bright outside and all the rooms inside have light also. Like, you don't have the option of just relocating them or doing something to vanish the light, so to speak. So what you will be allowed to do is put out the light using a shinui. What qualifies as a shinui is a good question we haven't talked about. I'm not at all addressing the question of whether light switches are automatically a grumma and derabanan. That's a fun discussion in its own right, not for right now. But that's what I'm trying to present as a makeshift example. Is everyone clear on this? Yes, Leah.
Just confirming, for number four, are the treated in the same category?
Yes, they are the same in number four. Number one and number four treat them both the same way, as opposed to numbers 2 and 3, which view Chol Hashem Bo Sakana as a step down. Michal?
If you're allowed to do, if a Jew is allowed to do the Rabbanan with a shinui, do you think in different cases of the migraine, do you have to try and find the
If a Jew is allowed to do it with a shinui, then...
Like, if you could turn off the light,
yeah.
And that would be allowed?
Do you have to try to move them from one room to another?
Just turn off the light?
Right, so that's a really good question. The answer seems to be, it depends on, I'm trying to think how global to put this. In this area, meaning Chol Hashem Bo Sakana area, yes, I would be expected to find a more lenient way to deal with things. As opposed to when we get to Pikuach Nefesh territory, where we say, we don't want you looking for the most lenient way, we want you to just do it and take care of it, right? That goes back to our Hutra Dechuya discussion. So, planning in advance, we'll say it's Dechuya, so you should take care of it in advance and figure out the least way. In the moment, we don't want you hesitating at all. But to put it a little bit more clearly, what I hope is clear more clearly, they talk about the issue of a woman who's giving birth on Shabbos, and what happens if she asks you for a light. She says, turn on the light. And the Gemara says, you turn on the light, so much so that even if she's blind, we turn on the light, rather than just tell her, don't worry, we turned it on. Like we turn on the light for her. And the argument is, she's very scared right now, and if you're not listening to her, she's going to get agitated and upset. Maybe she worries that the people who are there need light in order to see, whatever. So you go ahead and do it. Nobody in that discussion says, see if there's a neighbor who has a flame burning and bring the flame over from the neighbor. That's not even brought as a discussion. But when you're dealing with a case here where it's just about eliminating pain, assuming that the treatment is equal, find another way if you have another way. That's the idea. There was another hand, I think. No? Okay. Good. Was the Shulchan Aruch as traumatic as I worried it was?
Nah.
Okay, good. I'm happier to give the warning and it turns out not to be anything than to not give the warning and then people are like, oh no, I didn't understand that at all. So take a look at the Mishnah Berurah in source number 6. Yes, Bailey. Yeah.
After we did the initial Mishnah Berurah, you mentioned that there are three options of things that are possible to do.
Yeah, we are now on the second one.
Oh, fine. I thought you mentioned very initially.
Nope.
Wait, that was one?
No, one was the...
You mentioned two. We did a Mirlan Arum
right.
And Chinoy.
Correct. Number one was asking the non-Jew to do a Del Raisa. Number two is Jew doing a Del Rabbanim with a Chinoy. Clear? Yes. No, we said that you are able to.
That's fine. So then how do you paskin then?
No, this is only talking about what a Jew is able to do. It doesn't tell us about an non-Jew. Yeah. So take a look at source number 6, where the Mishnah Berurah comments on this Svara HaShlishis, the third view. He explains which one is the third view, in case we got confused, because there was view 0 there. So he says, HaSvara HaShlishis, Hainu, Shemuter lasos afilu kol hashivusim, meaning that you're allowed to do all the rabbanans without the distinction found in approach number 4. Virak al yedei shinoi, but only with a shinoi. Im hucholi kol haguf veimbo sakanas ever, assuming we're talking about someone whose entire body is ill and there is no sakanas ever involved. That's the Mishnah Berurah's explanation of what the Shulchan Aruch said. Yes? Correct. If it's Sakanas Eiver, then a Jew can do a Derabbanan without a Shinui. Yeah. Here's option number 3. Option number 3 is only if options 1 and 2 are not available. Okay? That's why I was hedging on calling these levels or not levels. Option number 3 is only if 1 and 2 are not available. As a matter of fact, I think I'll go out on a limb and say all of these are really levels. I will say that they're all levels. No, this isn't Sakanas Eiver. This is...
I know, but it was funny.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question?
No, because I wanted to say this first.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
So... I will actually view this as level. I'll tell you why. Amir la'akum, we said, is the type of derabanan that's not anchored in a de'oraisa and therefore is more lenient. So it would be better to ask a non-Jew to do a de'oraisa than for you to do a regular derabanan yourself. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because Amir la'akum is the lenient version of Dirabanan. sense. It's not a derabanan that keeps you from violating a deoraisa. It's just a standalone thing. It's what we were talking about when we said in view number 4, a weak derabanan. So therefore, it's better for me to ask a non-Jew, even if the non-Jew is going to do a deoraisa, better that. That's my first choice. If that's not available, then I do a derabanan with a shinui. I think that's correct. The only reason I'm hedging is because if you're doing your derabanan with a shinui, maybe that's actually better. You know, I'm not sure. I want to look that up. I don't want to say something that's incorrect. As a general principle, it's good to avoid that.
I mean, it sounds like it makes sense because asking the non-Jew is like not tied, you said, to Doraita.
Yeah.
So, like.
Right, but this is a double derabanan now because you've knocked it down to. You're only doing a derabanan and you're doing it with a shinui.
Which kind of. Is it like a.
Any derabanan. Any derabanan.
Yeah, but if it's like a tied derabanan to Doraita, isn't it like more stronger?
Yeah, but because I'm doing it with a shinui, it now takes it down a level. So I'm not so sure. Don't look at it as levels. I need to do a little research before I say that. I'm not sure that that's correct. Leah and then Bailey.
Is being like very, very, very hot on a hot summer day count as like uncomfortable, like not sick, but like.
Nope.
So
there may be heterim with a non-Jew in certain circumstances,
yeah,
but it has nothing to do with what we're doing in terms of illness. It will be a different issue. Just the general issue of pain for a derabanan, it will come up a little bit. It will come up a little bit when we talk about, after the quiz, when we talk about mitzvos choli and mechush, we'll see something that does, when we talk about shavus to shavus, that's when you'll see that discussion. I forgot, Danielle, I was asking a question before, so I'm going to take Danielle and then Bailey.
Yeah, I'm confused, because you said there's 3 options, but this is one of the 3, the chart.
The first option
was
the option of asking a non-Jew to do a deoraisa.
Right.
The second option is derabanan with a shinui. We were about to do the third option, and then I paused to say, hey, maybe these really are levels.
But then what is this?
This.
This chart?
Is number 3.
No.
Only number 3 is what emerges. These are the views that the Shulchan Aruch records, and then he says, we choose number 3. The others do not win. They don't survive.
Those are the 3 you're talking about. Do you get confused about?
No.
Is
it
part of option
2?
All of these are part of option 2, just we choose number 3.
The Shulchan Aruch is presenting us with option number 2. The way he does it is by showing us all the different views in the Rishonim and then saying, here's what we do. Bailey.
I'm just confused because you mentioned that it's better to ask, it might be better for a Jew to ask a non-Jew to do something even if it's a biblical law that they're going to violate rather than, and then if that's not available, then a Jew can do a derabanan with a shinoi. But isn't that the same thing as number 2? Doing a derabanan with a shinui. Was that the third thing?
No, we didn't do the third thing yet.
Then what was that? That was just like
that was just a discussion of whether it's better to do one as opposed to two, or whether they have equal weight, or whether two is better. That's all that was.
Fine.
And I'm not sure. I thought that I thought one thing, but now I think something else. So the answer is I'm not sure. What is view number 3, which is clearly after 1 and 2? Without a doubt, don't do number 3 if you have 1 or 2, okay? Take a look at the Mishnah Berurah in source number 7. Al Yidei Yisrael, mutter davka al Yidei Shinui, the Mishnah Berurah says. Specifically, with a Shinui. That's when a Jew is allowed to do the Derabanan. Ach, however, Hachaye Adam Masik Sham, Hachaye Adam concludes in his discussion, De'im i'efshar b'shinoi mutter shalo b'shinoi. If you can't do the derabanan with a shinoi, you are allowed to do it without a shinoi. That is option number 3. Derabanan straight. Understood? And you understand now why it's you know, below the first two options. We don't want you doing this, but if you're stuck, this is what you would do. Annie, with me? Okay. So, okay, that's our set of options. Yes, Ahuva. An example of that you can't do with a shinui. Where could a case come up that you can't do it with a shinui? So one possibility, when we talk about defining shinui, we're going to realize that thanks to modern technology, shinui isn't always available. Meaning, let's say you have the following case. You have somebody who is staying in a hotel and they're feeling awful. Like, they've got some kind of low-grade fever. They need to get back to their room. They can't possibly take the steps. They need the elevator. And they're standing by the elevator and waiting for somebody to come and push the buttons that they'll be able to ride the elevator up, and nobody is coming by. The elevator button is likely a derabanan. Under most definitions of what it, the issur of electricity is on Shabbos, we're going to call it a derabanan. There's a possibility to argue it based on Rav Asher Weiss, but it's not important for this discussion. How do you push an elevator button with a shinui?
Well, that's the weird part. People like do that.
So the question is, does using your elbow actually constitute a shinui? We're going to talk about that.
Use your head.
So, my point is that shinui isn't always an option. Sometimes there's no such thing as a shinui. Yes, right. So, voice activated is a good question overall. It would definitely. Yeah, I think it's fair to say we would consider it a derabanan. So, yeah, what would you do as a shinui?
Nothing.
You talk out of the left side of your mouth. Like, what's your shinui? Yeah.
Say a different language.
Yeah.
Say it in an accent.
That's good.
I like
yeah.
An accent.
Okay. We'll talk about shinui more. Last issue within Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana, and a very important issue. Children. The status of children is that they are automatically Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana. But the question is, sorry?
No matter what they have?
Correct.
Even if they're healthy? Like, just a kid again?
I mean, we'll see. But obviously they need something. But the question is, what defines a child? Do you mean until they're bar bat mitzvah? Do you mean until they're financially independent? Like, what exactly is a child for this purpose? So we start with the Ramah in source number 8. We're not going to do this at length the way I did it in the first semester. We're just going to see one source, and then the rest of it I reference in the summary in number 9. But number 8, Mutter lomar le'eno Yehudi lasos tavshil lakatan she'en lo ma le'echol. If there is a kid on Shabbos and the kid doesn't have food available, not that you didn't prepare food, but this kid is refusing to eat. We have no food, the kid is going to eat. So you're allowed to tell a non-Jew to make the food. Distam tsarche katan kechola she'en bo sakana dami. Because by default, the needs of a minor are like chola she'en bo sakana, somebody who is ill and not dangerously ill. So you ask the question of, what, is this kid healthy? Yeah, the kid's healthy, just hungry. But the question is, how old do you have to be in order to age out of this? That's one question. There's also a second question. Did the Ramah say that this is true for all of the needs of the child? There are two ways you can read this line. Okay, so I'll tell you. Normally, I'm used to the Ramah giving me the category and then the example. So he'll say, you can do all derabanans, and here's an example of it, or something like that. He doesn't do that here. He says, you could tell the non-Jew to prepare food for the kid. And then he says, stam tzarchei katan are like chol she'ein bo sakana. So the Mefarshim tend to see it as the last half of what the Rama is saying, which is to say, we view the kid as a chol she'ein bo sakana for all needs, not just food. However, they view the food example as defining who counts as a kid. You'll see what I mean by that in a moment. We spent a lot of time on this in the fall semester. I have zero desire to do that again. I didn't think that was helpful. Most of the Mefarshim, as I wrote in number 9, think that the heter here is really food-based, and that is what's going to inform how this works. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, as long as the kid eats special baby food, that's when you would say the kid is like a chol she'ein bo sakana. Once the kid ages out of baby food, the kid is no longer automatically chol she'ein bo sakana. So it starts from the idea that there's no food around. Why is there no food around? Everybody's got food. Not that the kid is extraordinarily picky. I don't know if extraordinarily picky kids survived in Lithuania 130 years ago. But it's that there's no food because the kid needs special baby food. Clear? Got it? Okay. That's the Aruch HaShulchan's view. The Nishmas Avram quotes the Chazon Ish and Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, in a personal communication to the Nishmas Avram, saying that it's actually when they are 2 or 3 years old, up to the age of 2 or 3. And this is based on a discussion about a child being allowed to nurse on Shabbos, not nursing from a human being, but nursing from an animal on Shabbos, because it's dangerous for the child to be without milk. And if there's no other milk available, they could nurse from the animal on Shabbos, even though nursing from an animal on Shabbos should be a derabanan. And their argument is, how old is the kid before milk stops being such a great necessity for their health? 2 or 3 years old. The argument is that that we know that a child is able to nurse from an animal on Shabbos because it's dangerous to be without milk, right? We talked about this. We talked about this issue at one point, not in terms of children, but we talked about it in terms of adults. It was in the discussion with the Baal Hamor about what you can do to prevent, but doesn't matter for our purposes. The point is that the child is allowed to nurse from an animal on Shabbos because it's dangerous to be without milk. So that's where we extrapolate this idea. That you can violate the rabbanans for the child, which we treat the child with chol she'ein bo sakana. So the point here, though, is that it's only dangerous for a child to be without milk up to a certain age. What's that age? They assume 2 to 3 years old. Yes, that number is vague. It is neither 2 nor 3. It is 2 to 3 years old.
2 to 3 years old.
Once they're older than that, yeah. Rav Yitzchak Weiss, the Menchas Yitzchak, says, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, we're talking about the issue of a non-Jew preparing food for a child on Shabbos. The assumption is this is a kid who can't fast. So we go based on the age of children when they need to start fasting on Yom Kippur, which is not before they are 9 or 10 years old. He says 9. He says the age of 9. Shmish Shabbos Kilchasa brings it as 9 or 10. So according to this view, it's age 9 or 10. You see, we have a wide range of views.
That's not a thing.
Sorry?
I feel like it's more like a lot of people, like it's either bar mitzvah or a year before or 3 before.
Right.
Go all the way to 9.
Right. So I think that may be why Shmish Shabbos Kilchasa gives you 10. The idea of 10, because for girls, it's already should be starting, you know, at that stage. Assuming normal health and so on. So all of these are taking their cue from the discussion about making food, even though we're expanding it to apply to all of their health needs. There is a lone view, the Mor Uktzia, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who says no. And the Tzitz Eliezer quotes him. And he says it's about when the child is dependent on adults. Now, you laugh. When is a child dependent on adults? When is a child not dependent on adults? But they go with the Gemara in Yuma that talks about the following case. A child is locked in a room and is distraught because they're locked in the room. Let me out, let me out. They don't know how to get out. And the Gemara talks about breaking down the door, violating Shabbos, because the child is traumatized by being stuck in this locked room. So we say that you're allowed to do that for this child until the child is age 6. We assume that up until age 6, the child needs to be with the mother. This actually has applications in other areas of halacha, in legal ethics, in terms of child custody issues. They talk about the children need to be with the mother until age 6. It comes up in a few different areas. So you have multiple views here as to, you know, what age is the limit. Natalie and then Leah.
Does the Shulchan Aruch mention children at all, or is that just the Ramah comment?
It's just the Ramah's comment.
The Shulchan Aruch never mentions that children are...
Shulchan Aruch does not bring this at all, and what's more perplexing for me, honestly, is when I brought this, I wanted to show you the Ramah's source. The Ramah's source in the standard edition of the Shulchan Aruch is referenced as Rabbeinu Yerucham, the Ramban, and the Rashba. And I looked in all three and could not find the source for the Ramah. I'm sure it's there, but I was not able to find it. I wanted to know where this came from, because it's not like we have a Gemara that talks about the non-Jew making the food for the kid on Shabbos. This seems to be a case that the Rishonim are bringing, and I have not been able to locate it. Yeah, which is frustrating. Okay, so that's... Oh, sorry, Leah, you were going to ask?
Yeah. I don't understand.
So a lot depends on what we're talking about as a circumstance. What's the level of need? In other words, are we talking about a kid who can manage in there just fine? Are we talking about a kid who is now in danger because they're in this room? Like, is there something dangerous in the room? Yeah.
It's just like an empty room where you don't
want to
leave. Why not? Locked
up. You can take a nap.
The whole
it's awesome.
What if we go off Friday night?
So the answer really does depend on the needs of the kid. Like, what's your circumstance? If there's a fear that the kid is in danger, then you have to do something. If it's just, I'm bored, you know, sing with the kid outside the room, play a game with the kid, do something. But breaking down the door, you know, where it's just a matter of the kid being bored, that's hard to justify.
I can't imagine a mom being okay with that kid being stuck in a room by the Shabbat. Even if there's no, like,
I think you're also, the case you propose is an unrealistic case, because this kid is going to need to eat. We go back to our food needs. So it's not like you're really going to come out with a case like that. You know, the question is just, so what are we dealing with? And you have to deal with the case based on the facts of that case. Yeah. Rebecca. So Bishul Akum is actually suspended for Cholosh Ein Bo Sakana. Yeah. So that takes us out of that problem. Yeah. That's the Rambam. Okay? Clear? Good? All right. So at this point, it will be quiz time then. And actually, because